Let's open to Numbers chapter 27, verse number 15, and take the story back up in the 40th year of the Exodus from Egypt, when the Israelites are in the plains of Moab, waiting for this year to finish out so that they can go into the Promised Land. They've still got just a few more months of the penalty phase. And Moses has been reminded that he doesn't get to go into the Promised Land, that he will soon have to die. God is going to let him have a special viewing of the Promised Land from the top of the mountain where he will pass away. But he will not be the leader going into the Promised Land. And so this prompts him to ask God to appoint the new leader now. And so let's read in Numbers chapter 27, starting at verse 15. Moses spoke to he who is, saying, "Let he who is, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of he who is may not be as sheep that have no shepherd." Now that's a Jewish saying to mean chaos. Jesus references back a place in Isaiah, I think, on the night that he's going to be betrayed, that he says that I'll strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. On another occasion, Jesus told the people that the or told the apostles that the people were kind of like sheep without a shepherd, and that he needed to kind of function as their shepherd already. So Moses knows people need leadership. There shouldn't be a gap. That's what he's effectively saying to God. We need to have some overlap here. So God designates who will be the new leader of Israel. And it's not a big surprise, it's going to be Joshua. But I want you to think about the ages of the people at this particular time. We're only a few months before the end of the 40th year of the Exodus. Moses is 120 years old, and the next oldest person, or persons, in the community would be Joshua and Caleb, the two spies that had been faithful. They're both in their 80s, or would appear to both be in their 80s. We know Caleb is. And the next oldest after them is going to be in their late 50s. Because remember, they were penalized with an additional 38 and a half years of wandering, for a total of 40 years in the wilderness, and only those under the age of 20 at that time that the penalty was put into place were going to be allowed to go into the Promised Land. So we've got some pretty big age gaps here between Moses and Joshua and Caleb, and Joshua and Caleb and everybody else. So God designates which of the two older guys is going to be the new leader. Verse number 18. So he who is said to Moses, "Take Joshua the son of Nun," and remember, Joshua is Yehoshua, he who is salvation. It's the shortened name of God with the word for salvation. This is actually the name of Jesus in the Hebrew. And in the New Testament, we know him better by our English equivalent to the Greek, Iesus, or Jesus. So take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him. Make him stand before Eleazar the priest and all the congregation, and you shall commission him in their sight. You shall invest him with some of your authority, that all the congregation of the people may obey, or the people of Israel may obey. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before he who is, And at his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, both he and all the people of Israel with him, the whole congregation. So God says, all right, designate Joshua in a public ceremony. Lay your hands on him. Verbalize this to everybody else. Make sure Eleazar, the high priest now, is on board with this and showing that this is the new government leader, and that he will be the one that will be prompting the questioning of the Urim and the Thummim. Remember, those are the special stones in the pocket behind the high priest's breastplate that answer yes or no questions from or to the Lord. So Joshua is going to be the one shown clearly to everyone. He will step in on Moses' behalf once Moses is dead. Moses did as he who is commanded him. He took Joshua, made him stand before Eleazar the priest, the whole congregation, laid his hands on him, and commissioned him as he who is directed through Moses. So Joshua now is not just the presumed leader of Israel. He is functioning as the clear designated leader. And again, it makes perfect sense because he's been Moses' assistant ever since Egypt for the last 40 years. He's been at the head of the military engagements that they've been involved in over the years. So it's not going to be that hard for Israel to get used to the idea that he is God's choice for this role. All right, so that's taken care of. God now wants Moses to make sure that each and every week and each and every month and each and every year includes the appropriate sacrifices in the ceremonies of the tabernacle. And so we have this chapter that gets very long and repetitive about the sacrifices that are supposed to be offered on a regular basis. Now, I will shorten some of the reading of this. You should read it on your own. And the only reason I'm shortening it is because it is often the same thing repeated over and over again, because it's a standardized sacrifice. Okay, so he who is spoke to Moses, saying, command the people of Israel and say, my offering, my food for my food offerings, my pleasing aroma, you shall be careful to offer to me at its appointed time. And you shall say to them, this is the food offering that you shall offer to he who is, two male lambs a year old without blemish, day by day as a regular offering. So every single day, you've got two lambs offered as the atoning sacrifice for sin of Israel. Verse 4, the one lamb you shall offer in the morning, roughly mid-morning, so right around 9 a.m. The other lamb you shall offer at twilight, or literally between the evenings, or roughly mid-afternoon. It's the decline of the day. It's that point when the sun is halfway from its peak to the sunset time. So morning and evening sacrifice. And then it lists the things that are offered along with these two lambs. Also a tenth of an ephah of fine flour for a grain offering, mixed with a quarter of a hin of beaten oil. It is a regular offering which is ordained at Mount Sinai for a pleasing aroma, a food offering to he who is. Its drink offering shall be a quarter of hin for each lamb. In the holy place you shall pour out a drink offering of strong drink to he who is. And then the other lamb you shall offer at twilight, like the grain offering of the morning. And like its drink offering, you shall offer it as a food offering with a pleasing aroma to he who is. So effectively, each day is kind of kicked off mid-morning with a prayer service, with a sacrifice service, an incense service, when this required atoning lamb is offered with grain and oil and wine. And then everybody goes about their business through the middle of the day, and then mid-afternoon or so, everybody pauses for another moment of prayer and incense and atoning sacrifice of a lamb with grain and oil and wine. And so the idea here is every single day, twice a day, you will get a reminder to worship the true and living God who takes away your sin. And this is a very important sacrifice because it represents Jesus. He is the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. He was put upon the cross at exactly the same time that this first sacrificial lamb was offered during the day. And he gave up the ghost. He gave up his life at the exact same time as the afternoon sacrifice. And he is fulfilling what we're seeing here, that the Israelis were told, make sure you do this every single day without fail. Now, it did fail. During the time of Israel's Babylonian captivity, there was no temple and there were no sacrifices, even though the people continued to stop mid-morning, mid-afternoon, and offer prayers. You see Daniel making sure that he did that while he was in Babylonian captivity. There is another time after the second temple was constructed that the Israelis went 3.5 years without these daily sacrifices. It was predicted in the book of Daniel, fulfilled during the time of the Maccabees. And in fact, the story of Hanukkah, which is celebrated every December amongst the Jews, is the time period when the sacrifices were started again. These daily sacrifices were offered. So Moses is supposed to be reminding the people, keep this as a daily reminder of your attachment to God. And food is very important in society. Remember what I've said before. You seal a meal with a deal. So every day, the Israelis were participating in a ceremonial meal with the God who saves them. Now, each week, they also had a day of rest mandated for the entire group. They'd gone for decades, couple of centuries, several centuries, as slaves in Egypt without a day off, without any holidays. So here, God starts off by telling them, you get a day off every week and you get special holidays through the year. And when those special days come around each week, each month, each year, you need to offer special sacrifices. And so verse 9 tells about the Sabbath sacrifice. On the Sabbath day, 2 male lambs, a year old, without blemish, 2 tenths of an ephah, fine flour, for a grain offering, mixed with oil and its drink offering. This is the burnt offering of every Sabbath, besides the regular burnt offering and its drink offering. So this is the public worship ceremonies. Sabbath days, you double up. You've got the morning sacrifice, the evening sacrifice. You've also got the Sabbath day sacrifice. Verse number 11. At the beginning of your months, you shall offer a burnt offering to He who is. So each month starts with, as the sun goes down and they're anticipating a new month starting, they'll be looking for the visible crescent of the new moon. If it's spotted or if it's expected because they've already had 30 days of a month, then a new moon is declared. And the next day, they don't just simply do the 2 sacrifices, one in the morning, one in the evening. They also do this special first of the month sacrifice. And that consists of this, verse 11, 2 bulls from the herd, 1 ram, 7 male lambs a year old without blemish, 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour for a grain offering mixed with oil for each bull, 2/10 of fine flour for a grain offering mixed with oil for the one ram, and 1/10 of fine flour mixed with oil as a grain offering for every lamb for a burnt offering with a pleasing aroma, a food offering to he who is. Their drink offering shall be 1/2 hin of wine for the bull, 1/3 for the ram, 1/4 for the lamb. This is the burnt offering of each month throughout the months of the year. And then also 1 male goat for a sin offering to he who is. It shall be offered besides the regular burnt offerings and its drink offerings. So the first day of the month is a really big deal for the Israelis as a community. It's a day off every month, and it is a special day of special offerings. And think about it. They've got the 2 daily sacrifices they have. If the first of the month also falls on a Sabbath, they'd have the Sabbath offerings. And then they have to offer all of these offerings for the first of the month. And so these are the minimum sacrifices that God is laying out here for these people. Now, then he moves on to remind Moses that there are special holy days throughout the year, special holidays, and these holidays require other sacrifices as well. So the first one, verse 16, on the 14th day of the first month is he who is Passover. And we know what the special sacrifice is on that night. Then, verse 17, on the 15th day of this month is a feast. 7 days shall unleavened bread be eaten. And on the first day there shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no ordinary work. So the 15th through the 21st is the feast of unleavened bread. It's associated with the Passover, the departure from Egypt. That day, that first day of the seven, is a day off from regular work, and it also requires a special offering in addition to what's being offered for the daily sacrifices anyway. And the list is in verses 19 through 23, and it's pretty much the same thing you'd offer for the beginning of a month. Then, verse 24, in the same way you shall offer daily for 7 days the food of a food offering with a pleasing aroma to he who is. It's to be offered besides the regular burnt offerings and its drink offering. So each of the 7 days, 15th, the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 21, all of those 7 days you offer the special sacrifices, just like happen on the special first day of the month. And then, verse 25, on the 7th day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. So on the 15th, you get the day off. On the 21st, you get the day off. That's the way the Israelis were told. And during the days in between, you've got all these special sacrifices that need to be offered. And I would mention that this would promote lots of other sacrifices, and the people would be feasting on lots of extra meat and lots of special food items. And so this is really a great deal of community celebration going on here. Okay, next holiday. Verse 26, on the day of the first fruits, when you offer a grain offering of new grain to he who is at your feast of weeks, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. And so you remember how that works. The first day of the week that falls during a feast of unleavened bread, that is the first fruits day. You take some grain from the field, you wave it before God, and dedicate the harvest to him. And then for the next 50 days, you count until you get to another first day of the week, and that's Pentecost. You take that day off as well, and you offer the same sort of sacrifices you would offer on the first day of the month and during each of the 7 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, because this is another one of the holy days. And then that brings us round to the seventh month eventually. Chapter 29. On the first day of the seventh month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. So you can tell from that, that means it's a day off of work. It's a special holy day. It is a day for you to blow the trumpets. And so this first day of the seventh month is not just an ordinary first day of the month. It's the kickoff for the agricultural cycle. And because of that, you sound the trumpet in a special way. It's also a sounding for people to get ready to come for the Day of Atonement on the 10th and for the Feast of Tabernacles on the 15th through the 22nd, because that's when the tithes will be brought in from the last agricultural cycle. And so the seventh month is the month of feasting after the harvest, and it kicks off with a trumpet. And guess what? You offer the seventh first day of the month sacrificial group that's all listed there up through verse number 6. And I would assume that that's doubled on the first day of the seventh month, because the first day of the month already has those things. Verse number 7. On the 10th day of this seventh month, that's Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the only day that the high priest goes into the most holy place, you shall have a holy convocation and afflict yourselves. You shall do no work. So this day has no feasting. It is a day of fasting. It is a day of serious contemplation of the need that the Israelites had to have their sins taken away in the tabernacle and then later in the temple. And the sacrifices are pretty much the same that you'd see on the first day of the month. Then, verse 12, on the 15th day of the seventh month, you shall have a holy convocation, you shall not do any ordinary work, and you shall keep a feast to the Lord, or to He who is, 7 days. So the Feast of Tabernacles kicks off on the 15th. The sacrifices that are listed here are different because we end up with a countdown of the major sacrificial animal. Listen to this. Verse 13, you shall offer a burnt offering, a food offering with a pleasing aroma to He who is, 13 bulls from the herd, 2 rams, 14 male lambs a year old. They shall be without blemish. Their grain offering, a fine flour mixed with oil, 3/10 of an ephah for each of the 13 bulls, 2/10 for the rams, and 1/10 for each of the lambs, and 1 male goat for a sin offering besides the regular burnt offerings, its grain offerings, and its drink offerings. So that's what you offer on the 15th, kicking off the Feast of Tabernacles. Verse 17, day number 2, it's 12 bulls. And then other sacrificial animals are the same. Verse 20, on the 3rd day, it's 11 bulls, plus all the other things. On the 4th day, verse 23, 10 bulls. And then 5th day, verse 26, 9 bulls. Verse 29, 6th day, 8 bulls. And then finally in verse 32, on the 7th day, 7 bulls, and then all the other things exactly the same as the other days. So that you've got this countdown until you finally arrive at offering 7 bulls on the 7th day of the Feast of Tabernacles in the 7th month. And great celebration ensues. But then verse 35, we find out that the Feast of Tabernacles is not just simply 7 days long, it has an 8th, I suppose, bonus day of celebration, a day of thinking about everything that's happened to you in the last year with God. So on the 8th day, you shall have a solemn assembly. You shall not do any ordinary work, but you will offer the burnt offering, a food offering with a pleasing aroma, 1 bull, 1 ram, 7 male lambs, a year old without blemish, the grain offering, the drink offering for the bull, for the ram, for the lambs, in the prescribed quantities, and also one male goat for a sin offering besides the regular burnt offerings and its grain offerings and its drink offering. And so that would wrap up the cycle of the mandatory feasts throughout the year, where all adult men who are physically capable of doing so have to appear at the place of sacrifice to participate in everything that we've just described here. And it was the way that God was letting Moses know, this is the absolute minimum that all of you of Israel should do in order to maintain a day-by-day, month-by-month, year-by-year relationship with me. And a lot of it revolves around the food that is part of the sacrificial system. Verse number 39, these you shall offer to he who is at your appointed feasts, in addition to your vow offerings, note that, vow, and your freewill offerings for your burnt offerings, for your grain offerings, and for your drink offerings, and for your peace offerings. And so Moses told the people of Israel everything just as he who is had commanded Moses. So as I said, this is God's way of letting the Israelis know this is the absolute minimum that you as a group, as a community, should be involved in through the year to maintain this relationship. You should be doing other sacrifices as well, including sacrifices related to vows. And that's probably what brings up the next chapter, which we will deal with tomorrow. And that is, when you make a vow, is it binding or not? And it's going to depend on who made it and when they made it and why they made it. Because some people do not have the free will, because of relationships, to make vows that are binding upon them. And we'll go over some of those things according to the Israeli law tomorrow. So let's mark our place here, and tomorrow we'll get back into the Word.